Alright, we are rolling.
Hello, hello.
I'd like to call to order the regular meeting and public hearing for the City of North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, August 25th, 2016. Commissioners Ryan, Heller, and Gildersleeve present this evening, and the Chair, Gary Fancher, is absent for prior notice, as are Commissioner Miller and Commissioner Lucky. The first item tonight is to approve the agenda.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the agenda as presented.
We have a motion, do we have a second?
There was, well, I guess I looked at it online quickly. There was, I guess, an uncertainty the way it was written, something about, do we have?
The minutes, actually.
Oh, yeah, the minutes.
Two in a second. They have copies of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
They didn't have the minutes prepared.
Alright, one second.
Thank you. We have a first and a second. Any changes or adjustments to the agenda? All in favor of approving the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And that is approved unanimously. The easy part of the evening. The next item is to approve the minutes for the July 28th, 2016 Planning Commission meeting. And I know that you've just received that, if you want to take a moment to review it. I know that there was a note where staff asked for clarification with regard to the vote on striking cedar shake roofs and inserting cedar shake roofs are not allowed on page 14, section C2 for NBC 18.34.050. The vote was 4-2. And listening to the audio again to clarify who voted which way, I believe, Commissioner Heller, that you were one of the nays, of the two nays. And I think Commissioner Lucky was the second. But we would need to clarify.
Yeah, I don't even know if there was a second.
There were two nays before, and I could hear very clearly Gary and Mary and Dick, and I know how I voted. So I believe that Jim was the second to those nays, if we want to pass
okay.
it along so that can be put into the...
Sure, record. Let's go with that.
All in favor, or excuse me, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I've had a chance to read the minutes. They're substantive as we discuss them. We have a motion. We approve the minutes.
Do I have a second? Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Again, unanimous. And now, moving on to item 3 of the agenda, public comment on non-agenda items. So this would be public comment that does not have to do with the topic of the public hearing. Was there any, I don't know, anybody signed up for comments? So no comments from, or no one wanting to make comments from the public with us right now. I'll close that portion of the meeting, some public comments on non-agenda items. And at this point, we'll move on to item 4.
Point of clarification. Dick, you moved on the minutes. Who seconded it? Was it Scott? Okay. Thanks.
And before we open the public hearing, though, I'd like to ask staff if there are any comments or changes since our initial conversations on this at the last meeting.
Sure. And since we have some citizens here, what I'll do is kind of go give an overview. And there are some copies on the desk over there. So the Planning Commission tonight is taking up a proposed code amendment that we call Low Impact Development Demonstration Project. And we have this section of the code currently exists in our municipal code, and it was associated with a different part of town that really no longer is applicable. So as we were looking towards development out in this area of North Bend. We have been looking to create a development style that is a little less intrusive to the environment, a lot more green, a lot more rural in nature, and a lot more in keeping with the existing character of the Wood River neighborhood. So as you know, private property has property rights to develop, and those property rights are associated with the laws and regulations, the development standards is what we call them, that are on the books. So currently, any development that would apply for an application to develop in that area of town right now would be required to comply with the municipal code standards in place. The city council did recently in the last year, can't remember if it was 6 months to nine, time flies, but they did create a new zone called the Constrained Residential Low Density Zone. That zone has a maximum density of 2 dwelling units per acre and a minimum lot size of 18,000 square feet. So, you know, pretty large. It's the largest, lowest density zone we have in the city and the largest lots. And you'll see on the zoning map behind you, if you see Wood River, to the east of Wood River is properties that are zoned that constrain residential 2 dwelling units per acre, 18,000 square foot minimum lots. Yeah, the ones with the stripes. The light yellow with stripes. Yep, she's got her hand on it. Right. So as we were looking at this area, number one, there's most of this zone is currently outside city limits in the what we call the urban growth area. This particular parcel is in the city limits and therefore could be developed under municipal code regulations as they stand today. But as we were looking to implement a much more rural character, we did start looking at that end of town because that parcel is actually one of our last very well-forested pieces of property in the city. We had one south of Exit 31 and this one. So what this low-impact development, low-impact demonstration regulation, what it would do is it gives the developer an option to develop a much greener, much more rural character style of development. And it requires a higher level of tree preservation, higher level buffering between neighborhoods like Wood River and this site. It does include street standards that are different than what you see in the other newer neighborhoods. The street standards that you see in the newer neighborhoods like Tannerwood have basically a 33-foot right-of-way. I think they're 5-foot planter strips, and then a 5-foot sidewalk. So curb, gutter, planter strip, sidewalk. Very kind of more urban, more suburban in nature. This street standard would be similar to what you see in Wood River. It would be a meandering road section with biochannels to handle stormwater, similar to Wood River. These would be planted because standards have changed since Wood River, but the same concept. It's just the look, instead of being the gravel, it would be planted. And then a meandering trail versus the hardscape sidewalk that you see in the other neighborhoods. Within that streetscape, we are implementing tree preservation and medians to really integrate. I don't know if any of you have been to Beaux Arts, but kind of that feeling where you're winding through the trees and the homes, there will be a lot more tree preservation than the newer neighborhoods, more in keeping with what you have in the Wood River design. So basically what we're doing tonight is we've taken a code section and we're applying it as a demonstration to this site in a desire to have a development result in a much more rural feel, much more sensitive to the environment, much more sensitive to the character of North Bend, which is, the trees and the green, while allowing new homes. Again, the density is not more than two dwelling units per acre, and 18,000 square foot minimum lot size. So, this does give the developer an option to take on this standard versus the standards that they could have walked in today and applied for a permit based on the standards today. So I think there's a desire from both the city and the development community to have a different product out there and one that's more in keeping with the rural character that we're hoping to achieve and have a different home product to provide and something that is more compatible with Wood River. So with that, that's kind of the overview of why we're here. Does Planning Commission have any questions on that one? No?
I just have two questions and part of my tardiness. So this is what we're talking about is only applying to the area that you, at least for now, little experimental plot deal outside of the Wood River area, that part of the map.
Right. Right, let's hear. Yeah, if you look under 1850.050 on page 2 of 11. So what we are saying is we are doing this on a very limited basis, and the reason why we're pinpointing this area of town is because of the trees, the mature forest. There's second growth forest. It's a valuable. It would make a great treed neighborhood. And we're doing it as a demonstration to just kind of, yeah.
Okay. So then that kind of leads to my other question, which was just clarification. You say tree preservation. In my mind, that implies the trees that are established, that are there, aren't going to be. Those would be the ones preserved as opposed to clearing it and then planting new ones.
It requires 35% of the total area in open space.
35%?
Yeah, 35%. Then under tree preservation, let me get to that. It has a tree preservation standard. We do work with an arborist pretty closely on this, and there are times where we did put in a number of provisions around, replacement of trees. There will be trees that come down without a doubt.
Right.
But the goal is to maintain 40% canopy cover. And sometimes depending on the health of the trees and where the trees are located, sometimes planting new at a 3-to-1 is potentially better than saving one if we feel it has exposure to wind or something unusual. So the tree preservation standards are pretty elaborate. So the goal is over time the neighborhood will always remain a tree kind of Beaux-Arts feel to it.
Thank you.
So it says, if you look at 1850-100, an average of 30% of all significant trees located within the developable area shall be retained. So that's outside of buffers, wetlands. That means within the development.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, you mentioned that with two residents per acre. That seems like it gives the developer and maybe even the individual lot owners that they're selling their lots and the development map they're sold. Seems like each residence is going to be allowed to be situated on the best aspect. They're not going to be lined up like suburban neighbors. Or each home site may find the homes being not facing each other, but facing in different directions to benefit the residents. Is that also part of the plan?
Yeah, if you look at the plan shows the street general layout of the street. Now, this can adjust slightly just because of natural, like if a tree's there, we're going to go around it, you know. But yes, because of the way the streets are laid out, the lots are going to be laid out very similarly to a Wood River neighborhood layout, which is, you know, they kind of meander with the road versus being lined up, which helps a lot.
Almost isolated to each other. Given the density of the trees, are going to be left standing and such, it's going to be an interesting neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
With your arborist, is your arborist suggesting a mixed species in these stands to bring in hardwoods and more open stands?
Mm-hmm. Once we see the tree survey and the tree evaluation, what happens is then our arborist gets involved, and yeah, he suggests, along with usually a developer has a expert too. He'll provide us input as to the replanting plan that should be imposed, and then with the development application, those become conditions of the development. So that will be addressed with the development, and yes, usually it's a mix.
And the maintenance of this community is going to be on the shoulders of the homeowners.
That's correct.
And they're going to be paying a fee, a monthly or an annual fee.
To their homeowners association,
Association. Mm-hmm. The association will then be managing the environmental assets, and as well, would also include the maintenance of the roads and these kinds of things, or would just be the...
The roads will be public, just like the roads are public everywhere.
Right.
But all the landscaping and everything associated would be the homeowners association.
And does that include also the exterior colors of the residences and that kind of thing? Or are they going to be
requirements
in that regard?
So as part of every subdivision that the city approves, we require the CCNRs, the covenants, to be provided to us ahead of time. And usually the developer has restrictions on or parameters on color, and those become part of their own CCNRs.
You know, I'm a forester by training, so I take an interest in what you're describing in terms of the diameter of the tree versus the impact. But as that tree grows, does the code take into consideration the placement of these trees with the residents in terms of the growth of the tree?
Yeah, that's going to be all part of the evaluation. So when it comes to placing or retaining significant trees on a lot, what usually happens is the developer will show a building pad shown on a box, and the house will fit, once designed, within that box in some way, shape, and form. Not perfectly, but in some way. Meanwhile, all the preserved trees are shown on the lot, clearly outside the box, but also at a dimension that will allow that tree to survive over time. So the beauty of having a two unit per acre, 18,000 square foot zone is you can actually retain trees and fit a home on the lot.
More trees than you really want.
Yeah. So this will hopefully create a complementary look to what is next door.
There's a lot of discussion in here. Am I hogging the time?
I want to actually, are there any additional questions on the details or information for staff before we move on? Okay. I actually would like to officially open the public hearing and allow anyone that wants to comment. I don't know if anyone has signed in.
Nobody signed in?
Nobody signed in. Well, I'm glad to have people with us. We're about 7:21. To use the official language, our chair doesn't give me an opportunity, so bear with me. Our chair is usually here every time, so this is the first time I've gotten to do kind of our recordings and step in. I had actually written this all out. That's Gary's recommendation. So I'd like to open the public hearing on amendments to Chapter 18.50 in DMC, low-impact development demonstration projects, to apply this chapter to a different property, and that's actually 722. And we do have members of the public with us, but no one has signed up to speak. I want to give you another opportunity before I close this portion of the public hearing, if anyone wanted to comment on what is before us today.
Do you get to ask questions?
If you sign up, you can speak, and your 3 minutes can be questions, and I'll answer most of them. And I think we're not too strict about the 3 minutes.
Yeah, if we don't have a room full, I won't time you tonight.
Name and address is fine, yeah.
Before I grab the sheet, so you can add you.
My name is Henry Duran. Address is 3782 Southeast 16th Street. Just wanted to ask, I had several questions. Is there a developer that's been chosen already?
Go ahead and give me all of it, and then at the end of the public hearing, I'll go through everything.
Are there areas that there will be no development? And one of my concerns is the river.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the amount of protection that bank will get, is there going to be construction in that area in the bank, or is that going to be off limits? Is there going to be further development on the other side of this, of the city line? In other words, I know on Southeast 16th Street, there will be a road going through. Is that the road that is going to lead into the new development? And where is that going to go and come out? Is there a plan for that at this point? I guess those are my basic questions. I want to know are there certain places where there's going to be no development at all? You know, where that bank will be protected, the river will be protected, and what's going to happen beyond that?
Okay.
Those are the basic questions I have.
Okay. If you don't mind, normally we go through all everybody, and then I'll go through everybody's questions.
Sarah?
That's me. Sarah Burke.
I have one more. There was allusion to a park. Uh-huh. We built, I'd like to know where that's going to be. Sorry.
So my name is Sarah Bird. My address is 46300 Southeast 137th Street. So I guess my questions are also in line with what this gentleman just said. If you guys have a developer, are there any? If so, what are the timelines to begin some of this project here? What exactly? I missed some at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Sorry. what exactly is going to be the city's, and I do, it's hard to see here. It would be nice to see it a little bigger to really understand what is going to be done. My street is now a cul-de-sac. It will no longer be a cul-de-sac after this is done, it looks like, anyways. So my concern is traffic and how that's going to be mitigated. Of course, also, we have a nice wooded area, and now I know, understand the city says 30% of trees are remaining. I want to really want to know if that's going to be done, because I'm not sure what happened over Miner's Bridge, but if that's 30%, I mean, I've been told it's 30%, but there's nothing there. You go on top of Mailbox Peak, you can see Miner's Ridge, you can't see Wood River, but you can definitely see Miner's Ridge. So I'm concerned with what's going to be going on there. That is definitely an elk trail. They're in my yard half the time, but I see them frequently over there, so I am concerned with the impact on the animal life around here, and again, traffic. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. Currently, I just sit on the end of my driveway and let them go down my street. So with the added traffic, I'm not going to be able to do that anymore. And that may decrease my property value, because I am on cul-de-sac right now. So those are some of my concerns.
Thank you, Sarah. Any other questions? And Chris?
My name is Chris Hall, and I'm in the very corner. I'm 13918 465th Avenue Southeast. And I would add anything. I was just curious what prompted this amendment, if I could even ask that. I noticed that the Goldsmith plat that was applied for and we were writing letters about some years ago changed hands, and it'd be, I don't know if you guys would be able to fill me in on what that is. In other words, I guess, is this a suggestion to develop this because someone is applying for this process, or is this just you're trying to project into the future should these sellers decide to sell this to a developer, or is there some of these orders on the table are not going to necessarily be available to us as public, I guess. But I thought I'd ask those questions.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. And Alan?
Hi, Alan Wallace. I'm a land use attorney. I represent the property owner right next here to Wood River. And we just are here tonight and to listen to comments, and number one, and then number two, to voice support for the amendment, and would urge the Planning Commission to recommend its adoption by the City Council. And then in terms of some of these other questions, in terms of any further development east of the property line? Well, that's outside of the urban growth boundary. So that's zoned RA5, one house per 5 acre, and rural King County zoning. And if anyone follows urban growth boundary politics in the city and county, it is almost impossible to move expanded urban growth boundary in King County. It really hasn't been done since the Growth Management Act has been adopted in the 1994 King County Compromise, set the urban growth boundary in place. So there's no expectation that urban development would occur east of that property line. It is, again, zoned for one house per 5 acres, so that would be the zoning density if that property were to be developed in future years. And let's see, as to the other questions, if you have any questions of me, I'm more happy to answer them. I think there was a question about development across the bank or so forth. I believe the city's critical area regulations will address that to the extent that that's a steep slope, and, or as the more fancy name is a geologically hazardous area, then the regulations will address that. And there's some of these other questions, too, I think would focus upon when a permit plan application is filed with the city, that's when the more detailed review occurs in terms of traffic and so forth. But this seems to be a wise option for the city to consider, again, as an option. It's not required for the developer to pursue that. And I think if you compare this to a traditional lot-by-lot development, Miner's Ridge is more of an example of that. This offers an opportunity to do something different than what you would typically see in King County. And lots of this size are almost unheard of inside your growth boundary anymore. So, if anyone has any questions, I think Gina might have some more answers to some of those questions.
And one last chance for anyone that wanted to speak. Okay, and we'll go ahead and move on to public comments at 7:32 p.m.
I can go through some of the. Okay, so I'll start with Henry, right?
Yep.
Okay, so you asked if there's a developer. There is interest in this property from a developer. The city's not privy to where that is in the process, but we do see the site developing. Based on the interest, you asked about is there. Will there be construction near the river? The city does have critical area regulations in place that do require protection of the river, 100-foot buffer. This site's kind of unusual because it actually has a bench on it. So the part that's closest to 140th, is kind of at one grade, and then there's kind of a steep slope and another bench down below. That, and actually if you look at kind of the site layout on page 10 of 11, you'll see that there is no proposed road connection through that tree green area, which is kind of a bench. That doesn't mean that they might not come in from a different area in the future, but the main area of focus is definitely quite a bit away from the river, and even if there was some development down on that lower bench, it would be subject to our critical area regulations and river buffering. Would there be development east of the site? It is in King County, and it does have rural zoning, so it would be at the King County zone, which I do believe is 5 acre there. And it would not be permitted through North Bend, and North Bend has no interest in extending the boundaries. So I don't see anything to be alarmed about. You asked about a park. Developments of over 40 do require a park. 5% of the development area to be dedicated to a park. This is a little interesting because this development style, the way the code is written, is to be really oriented to the trees and trails. So there is an incentive to create large buffers that will have trails in them. And so the park, when it gets designed, because the neighborhood hasn't been designed yet, just kind of the general parameters of where roads go, the park most likely would be of a natural, more natural, like picnic table in the trees type of park versus a more childhood, child park, mini park, basically. Sarah, you asked about, let's see here, you showed some concerns with traffic, and the city always, with any development, requires a traffic analysis. That analysis studies intersections that this development could impact adversely and requires the mitigation of that. With every development, there is a public hearing that gives you a better opportunity to comment based upon the specifics of the development, because right now you're talking about more general code language. So you'll have another chance to come in and say, traffic calming, and, I'm interested in seeing some traffic calming here, so that process does happen with the actual application. Okay, I think I got your questions.
Get the name, because you talked about the preservation of trees is going to be more, it's really part of this development.
So just
comparing, because I live like Binders Bridges in my backyard, right. And I see it, and there's no trees.
Right, so this one's, so low impact development, especially when you do curb, gutter, planter, strip, sidewalk, all of that infrastructure has a huge impact on trying to save trees or save any vegetation. So what we are trying to do with this one is the infrastructural needs is not as as intensive. So the opportunity, like if you've ever been to Beauharts or even Squawk Mountain, where you drive up Squawk Mountain, you can actually drive around a big cedar tree. That's kind of more the atmosphere that we'd be trying to create here. So a lot of the neighborhoods you see that have preserved trees have preserved them in like corners versus integrating them through the neighborhood. And the reason is a lot of times the infrastructure is so so great that and the density of the neighborhood is such that it's hard to save trees. This is an opportunity because of the 2 DU per acre and the lot sizes and the narrower road standards to actually integrate the preservation through the neighborhood so it would feel more like what you feel when you drive through Wood River. Okay. Chris, what prompted this? I think that was your main gist. The city has experienced a ton of growth, a lot of interest in our city, in the development community, and the city council, the city planners, we all want to see North Bend retain its small town character. The Planning Commission has been working really hard to create standards that allow the city to retain its small town rural character while realizing that property rights do exist, therefore growth will happen. So what prompted this is the fact that we see development happening out there. There is an interest in these properties, and we wanted to be proactive and bring forth an idea and an opportunity to develop this area of town in a little bit softer way and create an atmosphere that is more in keeping with your neighboring Wood River area. So it was a proactive decision to kind of take a step forward and see if we could accomplish something that has a bit different vibe and something that, you know, would be more more compatible. So that's what prompted it. And I think that's it. Okay. Yeah?
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Please go ahead.
Going back to the trees and the density, et cetera, we talked about the average amount of trees per lot is 37%. Is that what you're saying?
It's 30. It's 30 in the developable area, so that's lots and roads.
Because I just want to make sure that the trees that are not being included in that average are the areas that can't be managed anyway, such as the buffer between the river and the rich top.
Right,
and
right.
Those trees will not be part of the average, so you don't lose the trees that you're talking about through that mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about types of impact of groundwater, et cetera, we're going to do our best to make sure that there's the potential for losing groundwater over land versus retaining it on site is minimized. I think it's a wonderful idea. It's achievable. Would that possibly include consideration of building the homes above the ground level to keep that site available for pass-through for overland water?
This area actually has a unique, this whole area of North Bend, there's a couple things that we're doing that's really a little bit more proactive in the realm of point source recharge. So basically, the biochannel option for addressing stormwater allows basically the water to get back to the soils at its more in a more natural location than the pipe and pond system of the 80s and 90s. So what's happening is you're going to have these rain gardens and biochannels throughout the neighborhood, which is collecting the stormwater and cleaning it and then putting it back into the ground kind of more more simulating how it would have naturally been. The infiltration rates out here are pretty quick, so the water goes through the ground quickly. So there isn't a concern about surface water. It's actually the concern more is making sure the water doesn't go down too fast and we have time to clean it.
It seems like it is because we're talking about narrowing the roads, we're talking about minimizing mm-hmm. the pervious structures because of the water conditions. If it's that drains that rapidly, why are we so concerned about that?
About
slow absorption. In other words, we're minimizing the road sizes because we're concerned about water drainage.
Well, the road size standards are being the narrow road standard, or the fact that we're just doing a meandering sidewalk on one side. There's a lot of benefits to reducing the amount of impervious. Regardless of how much impervious is out there, they have to treat it. And they have to address it per the 100-year storm event as it relates to the King County Surface Water Manual. So by doing less pavement, you get to save more trees, have more green space, you have less water displaced and therefore water to address. So it's just a much more environmentally friendly way to develop.
Okay.
Yeah.
The issue of safety comes to mind about the use of believe we're not going to be using anything like acid, like a cement in this area. It's going to be mainly more pervious surfaces like asphalt, etc., for sidewalks and that kind of thing. Is that going to be part of the test of this site, or is this going to be expected to be codified into some bigger picture? This is the test site as it is, right? We're looking to succeed or not succeed. But it seems to me that in terms of sidewalks, we have kids on bikes and things like that. That sort of corrects a lot around tree roots, rising up. We're going to have a lot of issues like that throughout that community because of the trees and mixing in the harder surfaces with passage.
Right. So a few things. I mean, we're writing these standards because we believe they'll be successful. So we hope that the community likes it, and then we can bring this back to the group to discuss broadening it citywide through the larger lot zoning, the constrained residential. Asphalt is easier to, if tree roots do damage the asphalt, it is easier to repair asphalt and repave and a lot less expensive than if you had curb gutter, planter strip, and sidewalk to deal with. So that's one of the pros of using asphalt. Yeah.
And that is also true with sewer lines, things of that nature, that in the presence of growing trees, etc., we're going to be careful about how we're going to install our sewer lines and the impact.
Right. We've already consulted with our arborists about it, and there's definitely ways to do it.
Well, actually, I'm wondering if we should go ahead and close the public hearing and move to discussion at this point. I think we need a motion on that one.
So moved.
Sorry.
And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And that carries. So we'll move on to...
Who's second to that? I'm sorry.
I.
You did, okay.
We'll move on to agenda item 5, Planning Commission deliberation on NDMC 18.50 amendments. And did Commissioner Fancher share comments that he wanted to share with the commission?
I will look.
I
more and more about the driveways with larger lot sizes, and is there going to be, you know, people are going to be parking, I guess, parallel? That was kind of my, I thought, will there be enough room for people, will there be then parking just on their lawn for additional space?
I'm sorry, I was getting in the Gary, he did email. Yeah, I hadn't forgotten about that. I'm glad you reminded me. So, say that one more time.
Oh, just the driveways. And so I get the kind of partial impervious pervious in there. And I guess I'm just curious, is it a straight, and it sounds like there isn't going to be any parking on the within the community.
Right? Within the streets.
So if you had two cars, you just park them straight, parallel to each other.
You mean in the on the driveway?
Yeah.
So we did leave a provision that they could do some parking if they consolidated like one or two or three or four spaces somewhere where, you know, a couple homes could share as your guest parking. These driveways will most likely, our front yard setbacks do require a minimum of, let's hear, 25. The house can be set 20 feet, and then there's a 5-foot setback to the garage. So usually you have enough space for two in the garage and two, or sometimes three in the garage, because these are going to be larger, maybe, homes. So you should be able to park. And then keep in mind, at 2 DUs per acre, I mean, there isn't a lot of off-street parking demand, just because the density ends up yielding that.
That's true, with the exception of people who use their home site.
Right.
It's my experience that people who are likely to have large home sites attract a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm.
They congregate and have parties, and there is not enough parking space on the streets as it is, so they find themselves parking wherever they can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's apt to happen in large, in a community like this, where you have large lots. They're very attractive for entertainment, things like this, and where they do, we should probably have ways or areas where people can park, where they can congregate and maybe walk to the residence they're going to visit, but have something like that.
And the provision is allowed in that, in there, the provision exists to have that happen. Yeah.
Can we go out all the driveways?
If you'd like, yeah.
I'm pleased with that. I'm from Hollywood. I remember those kind of driveways. They're kind of cool. You have a green strip in the middle. But if they're practical in the Northwest, where you have very severe winters at times, even a lot of water, I think you'll find those Hollywood driveways are a problem, just trying to stay on them. And that could cause negative impacts to the surface around the driveway over time. I'd really like to urge you against that. It's a unique idea, but I don't think it's going to help that much in managing to get hurt more in terms of the driveway. The impact around the driveway in terms of foul weather.
Okay, well, that one is just encouraged. And there would be, if somebody wanted to do a Hollywood driveway right now, there's no provision that says they can't anywhere in town, and there's no provision that says you have to. So, again, it was more of a effort to keep the look and feel green, just to mention, to keep reiterating the importance of keeping this neighborhood a more natural look and feel than a more hardscape that you've seen in more dense neighborhoods.
I just think a gravel driveway will maintain the sort of the same purpose. Be more adaptable. I want to make sure that if we build this community, we make safety primary concern with children. In the area, kids will play hide and seek around trees that they dart out right and left. And if they're not easily seen in advance, they get themselves in trouble.
Well, then I agree with that, clearly, with every neighborhood. One thing that's really nice about narrow meandering streets with trees is even typically you if they're designed, even though often the speed limit is just a normal 25 mile an hour, but you just can't drive that, so you end up driving 15 miles an hour. They're usually the most safest communities because of just the way the streets are designed. So I think that's going to be a pro of this neighborhood.
Okay, but you prepared for pushback on that. I just think that that's an ideal world. People do pay attention to conditions like that. Some people don't. They test their driving skills out on roads like that.
I had just another clarification. If there's connector streets in the mm-hmm. Blue River and Miners Ridge, is that the way it's mm-hmm. drawn?
Oh yeah, yeah. They're designed to handle our largest fire truck. Yeah. So Gary has a couple comments. If you guys all kind of just kind of go through them, his first point was on the section related to 30% of the trees to be retained, and then he asked. It says we asked for 40% coverage of the tree canopy for the whole site, and he asked if that was lot specific or the whole site, and it is the whole development area. We're not going to get into somebody wants a garden and they want to adjust a tree here and replant over there. We're not going to do it lot by lot, so it is a overall site provision.
Less than no-cut zones.
Right. In addition to the buffers and stuff, and then he has some minor ones. Like he told us, there's two E's, which are, just typical. What do you call it? The legend. And then he's talking about. We're on page 7. And his comment is on 1850-100E. He says, I disagree with the three trees for every one. This is a dense tree area already. Commission one or two for every healthy, significant tree removed. So our tree requirement is 3-to-1. And he's saying he would like 1-to-1 or 2. And we actually think that you're going to lose a significant amount of trees just with the development. 30% are going to stay. We want to see that 3-to-1. We do allow 3-to-1 if it becomes too densely replanted. What we do is we say we want the 3-to-1 still, and you pay into a fee in lieu so we can go tree other areas of town. Or we allow them to go just plant them in parks and other places in town. So 3-to-1 is important for overall long-term tree canopy citywide. So that's part of that provision that we always recommend 3-to-1. And that's pretty stock standard in the industry.
And that doesn't include trees being planted in. Now we're talking about taking out certain trees that are there, but we're also going to be bringing in trees, hardwoods.
They'll get credit for the ones that bring in.
That adds back into the canopy. So
yeah.
Cutting 1-to-1 or 2-to-1, you're thinking about what else can be adding.
Right. Yeah. So.
And we did talk about the CZR. I just want to make sure again that we're talking about the CZR is always expanding.
Mm-hmm.
And by definition of each tree is going to be expanding. So we should be thinking about what the age of the tree is now and the long-term potential of that CZR.
Right, and that is part of the evaluation of the arborists as they...
That might keep us from planting certain trees, or it might require us to cut certain trees to allow the CZRs to expand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Imagine that. In other words, you have a certain amount of trees on site.
Mm-hmm.
They're all healthy, but because the CZR is encroaching upon one another, you have to begin thinking about harvesting trees to allow for the expanding CZRs.
Right. As the two arborists usually kind of, you know, the applicant comes with their tree analysis and tree proposal, and then ours evaluates that. And there's always discussion, and clearly developing in and amongst trees is a science. And so all those things will be evaluated at the time when we see the footprints of the homes and the footprints of the roads.
I am so excited by this as a naturalist. I think that actually having a community where the trees are a growing function.
Uh-huh.
They aren't static. They can be looked upon as a growing function of the community, and that the homeowners association can be responsible for that. I think it's going to be an obvious opportunity for them to take responsibility for the neighborhood.
Yeah, it'll be. I think it's a good. It's good. It's great, and hopefully the developers will find it to be a pro. It seems like that's the feedback we're getting, that this is a favorable thing. Gary has a comment that he'd like to add on page 7 at the top under E. If you go to, let's see, your second sentence or second line where it says, and dead or dangerous limbs, it should be dead or dangerous tree limbs, or trees or limbs. So it should be trees or limbs. So that was a good catch. Okay. I mean, give me a second here. Let me read his next one if you have any other.
An additional question is really interesting. Mm-hmm. You might be able to answer this one. As I was looking through this, where are the teeth? And it talks about the tree plan that has to be developed and the annual check and maintenance that they have to do. But what kind of teeth do we have if that association doesn't comply?
So what we do typically is a lot of what you see in here will either be notes on the final plat, which kind of run with the property. So they'll, because this is unique, we will put education into the final plat that says you're buying into this community and this is the parameters. And then we, to this day, have requirements you have to come in and get a tree permit. So... And typically, it's amazing if somebody does cut down trees without a permit. You would be amazed how many calls we get. So, I really think 9 times out of 10, when somebody buys into a community of this nature, they're buying into the concept also. And then, you know, there's ways you can do it. Notice on title, so they actually are signing it when they're buying their house. That hey, I'm buying into low impact development. Neighborhood with tree preservation as a priority, and I understand these are the ground rules that apply to my home. We could do it that way. So typically, when we're evaluating the what we call the final plat or the preliminary plat, we associate those conditions at that time based on the development that we see coming in and the need for what level of plat conditioning that we do. So... yeah, and also we ask for the CCNRs ahead of time, so those go in, and we don't administer the CCNRs, but they definitely, in neighborhoods like in Wood River, there's no parking on the street. The streets are wide, but you never see a car on the road, you know. So.
Looking at page 8, under chapter 17.25, that talks about residential recreation common space requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Does this tell me that there will be a regional trail coming through this neighborhood at some point?
Not a regional trail, no. What this neighborhood is going to have is for pedestrian circulation, it will have trails giving that versus the hardscape sidewalk system. So you'll have one asphalt trail, and then in the buffers, we're allowing the soft surface, just kind of meandering, nice little community trail that, you know.
So people will be required to give up a certain amount of property for a trail?
No. So the lots will be, if you look at the general street layout map, the streets are going to be laid out with a 6-foot meandering path on the side. Then along 140th, we're asking for a 30-foot tree buffer. So you really won't even see it. That's, I don't know what Wood Rivers is, but Wood River has a buffer in front also. So you don't really, you see the sprinkled rooftops through the trees, but that's about it. And there will be a trail within that little buffer area acting as kind of the sidewalk along 140th. So there will be still pedestrian amenity on 140th.
So there'll be a trail that goes through the backyards of people's homes?
No, the trails will be in the buffer areas. So people could build a fence to keep their dog in and not have to worry about some trail connection. Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
I just want to go back to something on this just to clarify, remind us that this is actually just adding an additional option. So someone could go in right now and develop that property under current standards.
Mm-hmm.
And this is simply allowing for an option that has a different way of laying out the streets, allows for retention of trees, and using alternatives like the bioswales.
Yeah.
So we're adding an option that will hopefully be a bit more environmentally friendly.
And Elizabeth, that's the benefit, and I hope you're listening. It's a lot easier to build homes when you have systematic approaches to it. This is going to be almost unique in every home site. So that's going to add cost, just doing that. And so the fact that somebody wants to do this, is they should be applauded and encouraged. Because if it works, it could be significant for our community, for communities like this in the Valley, who could find a way to keep a rural flavor, you know, while living in an urban residence. And I think we can encourage builders to find ways to do this in a way that makes it affordable, too. Because, yeah, I guess you could probably make these into multi-million-dollar homes and there'll be a market for it. Always people want to do that. They have the uplands of all kinds of homes like that. But if they can buy them down in the Valley and buy them affordably, I'd be all for that. I think that these guys are willing to make a shot at it. I think it's a block road.
This is a property that fits the parameters, that has something to preserve at present.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that is actually in our lovely new Ashmore that's within the city limits, correct?
We have one other area of town, but it's not served by sewer, so it's years out.
Years out. So it allows us to potentially, if someone comes in and uses this opportunity,
yeah,
to see how it works in reference to those areas that will eventually at some point could move into the city.
Right. I mean, one thing we're wanting to do, too, is we want to keep 140th rural looking, and one thing, that north side of the road from the school through Wood River has a very nice tree atmosphere. So this will require that tree buffer to stay. The current standards wouldn't require, you could build more like Tannerwood did, which is, that you can definitely see that in the neighborhood. So this is more of a...
I think we also last time talked about use FireWise concepts.
Mm-hmm.
In this residence, because there is so much standing timber and underbrush that's going to be allowed to remain, that we incorporate FireWise into how we use natural growth around that.
Gary has a comment on here, and I do want to suggest a slight change. Wouldn't use the word FireWise, but I'll read what Gary wants, and I understand what you're suggesting. I'm in total support of it. FireWise is associated with very, very clear standards on, and it's usually very rural where you don't have access to a fire services, hydrants located where they are within urban areas. So, because a lot of the FireWise requirements would be in contrary to creating a, you know, a treed atmosphere, and it is to usually correspond with underserved fire areas. What we could say is, so Gary has a suggestion to add the following sentence to 1850-100H. That's on page 7. He says, add, I think what he means is add this as the first sentence. So thinning should be done in preservation areas that encourages the healthy growth of native species. A managed forest has healthier trees by thinning, comma. We are creating a healthy forest that is safe for the residents. Okay. Actually, that was his sentence. So the part he wanted to add is thinning should be done in preservation areas that encourage the healthy growth of native species, period. So that's what he would like. And then he says Tree Protection Plan, the TPP, shall provide for clearing, pruning, and limb removal in accordance with fire safety zones. Well, he said fire-wise safety zones, but what I would suggest is fire...
I'd like to have attorneys look into the term FireWise and see if it doesn't offer the homeowners more protection with insurance that they follow FireWise guidelines. It can be done on an individual basis. It can be done programmatically.
Okay. I can do that. I don't know if that's going to prohibit a recommendation tonight. If you would like to give me some guidance as to if the attorney says yes, add it. If the attorney says no, then don't, then we could still move forward with the recommendation versus coming back another night for the topic.
Would you like to present a motion on
Gary's
idea?
I'm familiar with FireWise. KCD works with FireWise all the time. It's a very valid program, no matter where you are.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not intended to scare anybody. It's intended to encourage even more of these kinds of developments, is to make sure be wise about what, you know, you can hold a fire off until the fire trucks arrive. If you don't have flammables around your house, that's all it's talking about.
Well, then why don't we do this, meet you in the middle? The tree protection tree protection plan shall provide for clearing, pruning, and limb removal in accordance generally with FireWise safety zones. So that leaves a little latitude that if something in that doesn't work, there's latitude there. So if you put the word generally in there, we can look through. Otherwise, the provision is pretty strict.
And my concern with saying specifically FireWise is that if our intent is to try and preserve trees, a lot of those standards require that the trees be completely cleared so that they don't touch any structures.
Yeah.
So it may be counterproductive to do
FireWise suggests your FireWise condition, you're pruning up the first log and a half, 18 feet. That makes sense because you reduce the fire ladder. You remove low-lying brush right around your house that are coniferous in nature, have high tannins in it. Take away plants that do not ignite quickly with radiant heat. That gives you time to get the fire trucks to your house. You don't find yourself surrounded by fire and you can't get out. So I'm going to take a little harder line on this. I didn't realize there was a touchy issue about FireWise. It's a very safe thing. It doesn't require you to strip everything around your house, you know, 400 feet out. It requires you to be aware of how to control fire, how to control the spread of fire, and by trying to keep as many trees as you want and as you can into your property, which is laudable, the least you want to do is be able to protect yourself from fire. That's not a burden, that's a benefit.
Does it say 18 feet up on all trees?
Well, no, of course your younger trees won't have that kind of thing. You're talking about much more mature trees.
I think there's a certain amount of privacy that's lost if you go up 18. I mean, if the branches are still alive, if they're dead, certainly clear them. But 18 is, I get the intent.
This is for the trees just around your home? You don't have half an acre, so you don't have trees elsewhere, but outside that perimeter, that would be different. Just talking about buying yourself some time.
Just around your home? How far out? Circle.
My concern is that if we adopt specific language from an outside source of whose control over adapting it to fit the needs of the specific community.
We use
codes. It also kind of seems like
federal codes everywhere.
Well, wouldn't we be able to achieve some of the same things without putting a label on it that might undermine our overall intent or commit us to something that, again, we're maybe not foreseeing now? I mean, we can encourage them to do all those things or provide, education on that, just as we do for clearing out our, the community drain areas that are part of private property without, putting a label with requirements and restrictions and stuff that might totally work counter to everything that, that this is proposing. All those are great ideas. Everybody wants to save their house. There might be some ways that are better to do it than others, but I'm not familiar with FireWise.
It's not a label. It's a practice. It's not a label.
Then why do we need to put that
specific? FireWise describes something that insurance companies recognize. And if you're protecting your home with FireWise concepts, you're more likely to get a more favorable insurance in amongst a heavily tempered environment. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, you're going to find your insurance is price mitigant. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It should be considered. It's not a.
Is it something that we need to draw the line on?
We've got to consider as we encourage. And I'm one of my velocity trees around my property, and notice they're all pruned up. I'm just saying that having velocity trees in your property takes responsibility to maintain them so your house is safe. That's just good stewardship. It's not removing the trees, it's not allowing them to somehow run wild, but right around your house, you're going to have some control where you're going to limit the potential for fire hitting your house faster than it would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. As long as we have a fire response, they can get your house in 10, 15 minutes, you're going to be safe.
What do we have right now, I guess, that's in here? I guess, where's the section? Just curious.
Well, we did not list the word fire.
Gary was talking about adding a little.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it right now, and it talks about standards on water supply and the water supply rate and minimum standards. So there, we have all the city standards on this, on water, our water pressure, all of that, based on the fire department's requirements and what have you. So I agree with you that it's a great program. What I don't want to do is put something into the code that we don't know the ramifications of, and all of a sudden we've just implemented something that, requires, like it talks about mobile water supply apparatus, large diameter hoses. It talks about things that are potentially... it seems like, talking more in the rural area. So if you want to use the word FireWise, we need to dive into how that's a whole nother level of...
Yeah. We are creating a rural environment. This is what we're all about. We're talking about having a rural community inside an urban city limit.
Well, I don't think the argument is with the idea that is presented by FireWise. The question is the language that we use in referencing it. And, when it talks about things like that might affect what we have to buy for the fire department that we might not have. So there could be follow-on implications of adding that to code. And we need to know better where that is.
I agree. There's no boogeyman here. I'm recommending that's an opportunity. You can load it up or down. I'm crying fire right now.
Well, and I don't think we have any of us have a problem, it's just how to refer to it.
Well, I think we could add a provision that says, let me look in the education part.
In the part of the tree protection plan, it really is protecting, it's not only the homes and the homeowners, as Dick is saying, but it's also the trees themselves.
themselves.
So why don't we say the, let's see here, let me think where we could put something.
I haven't walked through that forest, and you know, I don't know how it is. I have a vision in my head of how it would be, kind of the trees, I'm assuming, because they're a little...
Pretty tight in there.
I don't know. They might be. They might be a little older, more mature, spaced out a little bit, and might have already done some self-thinning, but if it hasn't, then yeah, the site needs to certainly be prepped and safe. But then, throughout time, as those other planted trees grow up, I mean, there could be fire issues.
There's a lot of thunderstorms. It's on its way out. It's lost the race of the dog. I think I've introduced a phrase, a manual, a technique that if staff would look into it before we make a decision against it, because I don't think it's going to be...
I think, though, well, it doesn't...
Why is it existing there?
Because it's a large, there's quite a bit of regulations associated with it. I think it's a great program. I don't know if every single regulations associated with it is what we want to draw into city limit and our regulations, because our regulations, the city regulations now govern, our fire department governs. And so what I would prefer is to say in this that, you know, your tree protection plan shall include a fire safety analysis with provisions to... provisions that require long-term fire suppression techniques, or you know, you could say a numerous things that our fire department then can get involved and say, okay, you know, this type of bush, no way, but yes here. But to start using the term firewise, I think we're getting it. It really does take into more rural contexts than urban contexts. And the reason why density and cities under Growth Management Act are required to develop at an urban density is because we have the services to serve that density. And so I'm not opposed to it, I'm not pushing back on it, I'm just thinking what's the best way for us to minister it. And the best way to us to minister it is to allow our fire department to do that. So if we just say a tree protection plan that includes a fire safety plan to be reviewed and approved by your fire department.
That would allow them to update for the most current.
I would encourage the commissioners to put together a proposal. I will support it, but at least you'll have to support it.
I'm comfortable with it the way that it is, with the additional language put forth by the chair.
Okay.
Under H, I'd like to move to pass the amendments to Chapter 1850 of the Northland Master Plan, low impact development demonstration projects. Make that a motion.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
As a follow on that, can we get a little bit of information from the fire department on their take on implementation of firewise standards?
Yeah, as a just a general
information for us.
I'll ask one thing. Yeah, let me ask and let me report back. Depends if. Yeah, if it requires resources for them to come, then that might be a different story. If they can just, you know, so let me ask and see what they will do.
Because we do have a little bit of a unique mix.
Absolutely.
I think it's good to, I mean, I understand we don't want to adopt or use this exact same program, but at least referencing either a rural program such as the Firewise or the Forest Service and some of their wildland firefighting, because it's not a structural, we're not talking about a structural situation here, we're talking about a natural situation.
Right.
So I just don't know how much overlap there is with A's, you know, an urban. So that's the thing. That may not be their specialty. Maybe they're well-rounded, but maybe they're not. So we just need to talk to the right people. I mean, maybe they're the ones that would come and put out a fire, but they may not be the best ones to advise on how to thin property initially.
Right. That's a good point. And I don't know, just to follow up, because, Dick, your idea is great, and it maybe should be more of a citywide evaluation versus a site-specific, because, you know, or at least a citywide on the fringes where we do touch Rattlesnake Ridge or what have you. So let me ask the fire department. Maybe I can get them out here, and we'll dig into it a little bit.
And that's kind of my thought, too, is that particularly as we put in things like the cottage residential, where we've got a bit closer density, having an idea and an overview of the city and what should be done to implement those, because the reality is we're surrounded by forests. And we had a very good demonstration of the fact that wildfires can happen last summer.
Who seconded? I'm sorry. Thank you. All right, I think that's it.
All right. So, any additional comments?
I just have, I think the write-up is really good in the direction that, you know, we on the Planning Commission have discussed. I think one thing was just I think I found the places that I see keeping significant trees and spreading the retained trees throughout the site and not like on one corner of the site. But is there a place you could, a direction you could point me in? I think it's like I see under 18.50.100. And it talks about
the yellow's really hard to read, sorry.
The first sentence is an average of 30% of all significant trees. And is that of existing significant trees?
Of all significant, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it says the developable area, and it says within the developable lot areas, it says the developable area is considered, and actually it shouldn't have the word lot, so let's get rid of lot, developable area. The developable area is considered areas where lots, roads, public infrastructure are located, sensitive areas, their buffer, perimeter buffers, and the buffer along 140th is not considered to be within the developable area.
So I think I think that's the intent from what I heard. I just want to, make sure it was kind of in here. And I think that they keep significant, I would say, probably healthy trees are in there. And then I think the idea is to spread those retained trees throughout the site, right? I mean, it's kind of...
Yeah.
So is that written in here? I mean, that, or is it just these kind of simple concepts?
It is in my opinion, but it... But if you want to say the 30% shall be... At some point you kind of... over-regulate, because the reality is trees do better in stands. So you might end up having a stand of trees that ends up representing 12%, and then you meander through, and there's one or two, and then another 7%. So I think just naturally it's going to happen, but you can add language that says, preserved trees shall be distributed throughout the site, but that's kind of why we said the developable area.
Yeah, throughout the developable area.
Because that's on top of the buffers, and so really we've created buffers around the whole site, so you won't even really notice the development from the exterior.
Right. No, and that's great.
But from the interior, you won't see the trees we're talking about. That woman over there, in Minor Ridge, you can't see the trees or the buffers. They live in an open area, but they thought they're buying a tree neighborhood.
Their trees are along the kind of just in the, they have a stand of trees along more of the shoreline, not shoreline buffer, but on the ridge before it drops down to the buffer. So it's hard to see the trees because they're on the backside. Yeah. But, yeah.
I just, you know, it's just a comment. I think that just to make sure something like that doesn't happen, I guess, is say, oh, this one corner, there they are. It's within the site. I don't think that's
the percentage of trees that aren't accounted for, but the buffers all being in there.
Yeah.
And then all cuts. So there's that, that would be the rest of the land available to whatever happens. It gets cut down. Then you portion across the property. Mm-hmm. Every line, not in the corner. So.
Yeah, to me, this is it's really intriguing. I hope there's enough incentive for the developers, in future developers, to adopt this practice. And I would also really be interested in seeing like the incorporation of biochannels as existing streets in established neighborhoods get renovated, upgraded, or street down. I mean, I'm thinking of Silver Creek, you know, huge wide streets.
Yeah.
With the potential to do that, especially
in your contract, I would encourage you strong language to encourage the contractor not to scar trees that are going to leave trees.
Right. Oh, there's fencing requirements. They can't even get within the saved trees would be fenced. Encourage the our street standards now have biochannels. So if like Silver Creek was to be developed, you don't have stormwater out there right now.
Right.
It would be most likely. Biochannels for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Mm-hmm.
It's much as the Cedar Falls neighborhood biochannels. If you've ever walked through that neighborhood, they're actually they look good.
Mm-hmm. They're taking
them. We'll check that.
Yeah.
They're taking them to the sidewalk and they're very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
There's some at Snoqualmie Falls under the lower park, and they're really. There's also irrigation there.
Yeah. I'm not supposed to need that.
Keeps it looking like Washington.
Yeah, right.
I just have one other comment that's more related to the way we receive materials and in the email and get this packet. And it just looks to me like this is the way we get the PDF is by taking like this copy and putting it in a scanner and then that gets emailed to us because there's really poor resolution in this, so it doesn't look like it's the PDF itself that we're sent. Because if it was, it seems like resolution would be maintained. And you could like zoom in on this map. But I can't really do that. And I don't know if that's just me.
No.
So we're not getting the file. If we got the file, it seems like this picture would be.
I ended up going to IMAP and pulling up.
So that's just a comment. I don't know if there's anything I can do.
Okay, well, I'll look into it because we've had that internal discussion ourselves. I think it might be, we might need some upgraded equipment.
The way things are uploaded.
But we will, let me at least look into it, make sure we'll do our best to make sure you get the file.
While we're talking about that, and I think this, if we stick with Robert's rules, this is a point of suffering. The yellow font.
Yeah, it's terrible, I know.
It was a nightmare. The only way I could read it was by blowing it up, looking at it on the computer.
I don't know why it came out yellow, because on my screen it was dark orange. I don't know.
Your printer running low.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't there the day they printed it, so maybe it changed when I emailed it or something. But, all right, we'll look at the file and no yellow font.
Make it a little bit easier to filter anything out. So,
move to adjourn?
Is that where we're going to go? Is no one feeling comfortable?
You moved to approve the whole, the regulations. Yeah, that I think that was the subject to, so point of clarification. Your motion was to approve the regulations subject to the edits that we made tonight, and Scott was the second. Yeah.
And we voted.
Yeah. Okay. Because then there was questions after that. I just want to make sure.
So do we have a second on adjournment?
Second.
All in favor tonight. Say
aye. Aye.
Yeah, you think. Gary's always here. I don't get an opportunity to do this. And, yeah.
Yeah.
And I couldn't.